Get your hands off me, you damn dirty ape!
Threat Podcast. I am Chris Gore, joined as always by
Anthony Ray Bench. How's it going?
Hey, it's going good. And we're standing right outside a movie theater in incredibly hot and humid.
Oh my God, it's so hot.
Yeah, hot and humid Pasadena. We're right outside the Arclight here, about to see the new Spider-Man film, Spider-Man Homecoming. But before we do that, we have a lot of things to discuss.
Yeah, quite a few movies.
Yeah, we got movies. We're going to see, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about Spider-Man Homecoming after.
And see it. Don't forget Jeff Goldblum.
Well, yeah, first of all, yes. Okay, so if you follow me on Twitter, at that Chris Gore, you probably noticed photos of Jeff Goldblum and I hanging out.
Yep.
Okay. It appears as if we were. We actually were not. But Jeff Goldblum has this show at the Rockwell in Los Feliz, right? And it's every Wednesday. So he does a show when he's not working, right? And I've seen it twice now. It's an incredible show. So it's at this place called the Rockwell. And how do I describe it? It's like part comedy show, part audience participation, where he's doing crowd work, and it's also a jazz show. He plays the piano, just an incredible, incredibly talented musician.
Does he play anything else or just the piano?
Just the piano.
Oh, okay.
For the two shows that I've seen. But what I thought was amazing about it is that, first of all, the show is like, it's like $25 to get into the show. They don't really...
Which isn't that bad.
They don't announce the tickets or anything, and they don't really promote it. It's like this weird thing where you just kind of have to know when the tickets go on sale and what's happening. And a buddy of mine named John Champion was able to snag tickets to two shows. So now I've seen it twice. It's amazing. First of all, what's great about it is it's like a dinner theater, right? So you're sitting around and everyone at tables. It's like being in Jeff Goldblum's living room.
Nice.
He just, no one announces, welcome to the stage of Jeff Goldblum. They don't do that. There's no announcer introducing Jeff Goldblum. He's just suddenly around, mingling with the crowd. And when he does this thing that's where he just starts coming out and he starts talking to people, he asks people what they do. He plays this game, which is sort of like 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, but it's actually, he connects any movie to himself. So he names a Jeff Goldblum movie, another actor in that movie, and then you name other movies that actor was in, and eventually everything comes back to Jeff Goldblum.
Am I right? I'm very correct. I'm very good at this game. I impressed myself.
Yeah, I think that's called the movie game.
Is that the movie
game? Yeah, it's the movie game.
So there's that. Then he reads, he read the president's tweets.
At the real Donald Trump, 8 upon. Who can figure out the true meaning of confetti? Enjoy.
Oh God.
And he does other stuff where he'll read movie quotes and you have to name the movie.
Oh, that's neat.
He has a buddy that helps him with the show and hands him a piece of paper that has like all this information on it, and it's incredible. Anything on Google, just look up Jeff Goldblum at the Rockwell, and you have to catch this show. It's what I love most about it is I didn't realize what a huge movie geek that Jeff Goldblum is. I mean, the guy knows, you name a movie, he knows the actor, the director. He is like a living version of IMDb.
Oh wow, that's neat.
Yeah, he's got to be. What's so funny? The last time I saw the show, he had to like the show was canceled because it's only when he's available, right?
Mm.
So he had to go off and he had to work on Thor Ragnarok, and then he had to work on the new Jurassic World film. So I'm glad to hear that he's in it. So much to discuss, but before we actually get to our movies this week, I have to get in a couple of plugs. The Film Threat Podcast, including Anthony Ray Bench, will be at San Diego Comic-Con on Friday, July 21st at 2 p.m. at the San Diego Central Library. Look for the Film Threat Podcast there. Also, I'll be doing another panel at 7 p.m. him, Star Wars Dysfunctional Skywalker Family at Convention Center, San Diego Convention Center, Room 7AB. In addition, a special edition of the Film Threat Podcast, July 29th through 30th, at the Pasadena Convention Center. We're going to be doing a podcast called All the President's Movies. At Politicon, so you can go to the Film Threat Twitter account, and there's a link to buy tickets to Politicon. So hope to see you at Politicon in Pasadena, my hometown. Also, I'm going to be at Dragon Con. I will be. Not Anthony. You're not going to be at Dragon Con.
Aww.
It's in Atlanta.
I know. That's too far.
I'm doing a ton of panels there. I don't have the dates and the names of the panels, but obviously, if you follow me on social media, you'll
see that. Keep an eye out for them.
Yeah. So Dragon Con in Atlanta, Georgia, September 1st through 4th. Doing a ton of panels there. Let's get right to our movies. A lot to discuss.
Sure.
Anthony, you've seen more films than I have. Tell me about the first film for this week.
The first film is called Samey Blood. It's about the Swiss reindeer herders. It's like this tribe of kind of nomadic farmers, basically. They have their own school, and the basic gist of the movie is this old woman is going to her sister's funeral, and she's kind of, I guess, turned her back on the Sami people and the culture, and it goes to a flashback of like how she came to basically reject that side of her, reject that side of her heritage.
You see her young.
Yes, self. Yes. Yeah, it's really good. It's very touching. The Sami people, I was reading into it. It's one of those movies where you learn a lot and you kind of want to do your own research. So I checked out Wikipedia, I checked out other sites, learned about the Sami people. The Swiss government did like horrible experiments on them, genetic experiments. Like, there's a scene where they line up the main character and just basically take nude photos of her, and they send them to a lab. And she's like 14 years old, and that stuff actually happened.
It's another in a line of those movies that are depressing and horrible.
Yes. Yeah.
Ways that humans have treated each other. I mean, you know, when you look at like the Japanese internment camps during World War II, which George Takei was in one of those. George Takei, of course, Captain Sulu from Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I mean, I was completely unaware of this, but you know, and you look at so many of these films bringing to light just horrific crimes. I wonder what, this is a weird thing, a weird thought, but I wonder what movies will be made 50 years from now about atrocities that are happening now that we're ignoring.
Yeah, right now we're kind of in this, we're seeing a lot of movies made about the atrocities that happened in the 90s. Which are substantial events.
But I'm just curious about is this film brings to light, like, there are atrocities happening today that are being completely ignored by the world community.
Well, the Sami people are still considered like second class citizens in Switzerland. Like, they're just kind of, they're the Swiss rednecks, basically. They're always looked down upon.
So in the end, was it hopeful or?
No, it's very depressing.
it's
not at all. You basically learn why this character has rejected her heritage. She goes out of her way to pretend that she's not a Sami. She makes up lies about her past. She tries to mingle with non-Sami people, and just it's very depressing. But at the end, you do see the remorse of the character and like how it ruined her relationship with the sister, and you definitely the main actress, I can't pronounce her name because she's very Swiss. The entire movie is in a different language, but you just see the emotion in her face, like.
But it's subtitled.
Yeah.
So.
So that's Sami Blood. I would recommend it if you're in a very depressed mood.
Oh, no.
Don't watch it when you're happy, because by the end of it you will be depressed.
Oh my God, it's.
But it's fantastic.
But it's one of those things where also, like, what you brought up earlier about just learning history that you were unaware of.
That's the best kind of movie. Like, when you're motivated to learn more about, you know, what the movie is about. I love those kind of stuff.
In those instances, I turn to a documentary. There's got to be some documentary about that.
Oh, there is. Yeah.
So, well, you know, on another note, I saw War for the Planet of the Apes.
Another movie about kind of prejudice and second class citizens.
It does have,
but they're monkeys.
It does have those themes. I mean, this is, you know, obviously this is the third film in the new Apes trilogy.
Yeah.
Right. So with Rise and Dawn, of course, Andy Serkis, you know, also reprises his role as Caesar.
Yeah, the master of motion capture. That guy is brilliant.
He is a brilliant. I mean,
him and Toby Kebbell.
There's got to be at some point like an honorary Oscar for that. That is a talent. Because when you look at, when you compare those scenes, because I saw an early preview of some footage from it, and they showed full scenes where they were in the, you know, they were just dressed as people, and they had the sort of mocap stuff all over them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a performance. It is a performance. The reason the digital skins are so good is because they're mapping that performance right over Andy Serkis's face. So,
yeah.
And the weird thing is, I can never get, someone has to figure out a way, Rise and Dawn. I always get confused about which one came first. Is it Rise and then Dawn or Dawn and then Rise?
It's Rise and then Dawn.
It's Rise and then Dawn? Okay, yeah.
I didn't care for Dawn, but I loved Rise.
Yeah, well, I will say that this is the best of the series, having seen the previous two. The best of the series, and what I love most about it is I think that they've just, it's the pinnacle of the technical craftsmanship. What I loved about it, and Norman Gidney has a review on the film on filmthreat.com that you can read, and I agree with what he said. It's one of those things where a lot of these summer movies get caught up in all these big digital effects, CGI and all that stuff, and this one has a lot of that, but you don't lose any of the, this is a weird thing to say, any of the humanity.
Mm.
You know, it really is a story about characters. And they meet, there's a great character they meet, I don't want to spoil it, in the middle of the film that is an ape that is, intelligent, thinking, can speak, because not all these apes can speak, they speak in sign language, basically. So they meet this other ape in the middle of the film, and he's sort of a comic relief, and he's amazing, this new character they brought in. What I did also love about the movie is there are a ton of references to the original Apes series that kicked off with Charlton Heston. I love the original Planet of the Apes film.
Oh, same here. It's a classic.
It's a classic, yeah. I mean, it might be a little slow-moving for some, but...
I like the third and the fourth one, too.
Yeah. So the original series, you know, that kicked off in the 60s has a lot of social commentary. I mean, Rod Serling helped write the script, and it has, of course, that dark ending where he realizes, I'm on Earth! But what's cool is this directly connects, the final film in this trilogy directly connects to those Charlton Heston movies. I don't want to say how, but it's really clever the way they do it. Another thing I loved about this film, which more filmmakers have to use this, really simple thing, you know, because we've talked about, in fact, we talked about on our last podcast, you saw a film where the subtitles were over white.
Yeah.
Way that they use subtitles in this film so you understand what the apes are saying, but the way they use it, they put it in where the people are talking. So,
oh, that's neat.
It's not like the subtitles are at the bottom of the screen in white. The subtitles appear organically as people are talking, artfully done, so it's like over, so your eye doesn't have to go to the bottom so you're not missing anything. Why aren't more filmmakers doing that? I mean, obviously there's more effort involved in having the subtitles line up, but I thought that was just a brilliant thing that I think more movies should definitely take advantage of that. I don't want to ruin too much of the story.
Thank you.
But
I haven't seen it yet.
Woody Harrelson is fantastic as the adversary.
He's kind of a Colonel Kurtz type character, right?
Definitely like a Colonel Kurtz. They're sort of the last gasp of humanity. And you see the beginnings of what leads the ape society into the Charlton Heston version. I love that they paid that respect. There are a couple other references that made me groan, but really worth it. I can't, like, and also it's just good to see a summer movie that isn't insulting. So, highly recommend it. War for the Planet of the Apes. You've gotten my review, my non-spoiler review, and you can check out Norman Gidney on the website. All right, we're heading in now to see Spider-Man Homecoming, and we'll be back with our review. Well, we just got out of the screening of the film, and we haven't even started recording, and Anthony and I are already at odds. But interestingly, before we actually talk about Spider-Man Homecoming, there was a trailer for War for the Planet of the Apes right before, and that gave me chills just watching that trailer again. Yeah. Reminded me how great the film is. So
I'm pumped. Comes out next week.
Yeah,
I'm definitely going to be seeing it.
Yeah,
Yeah. So, yeah, but let's get into I just thought it was awesome. The War for the Planet of the Apes.
Well, I hate you for seeing it without me.
What? I'm sorry. It was a happenstance. Whatever. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's get into it. We just walked out of the screening. I shouldn't even have to say this, but remind you to stay to the very end of the film because there is a worthwhile payoff. A very worthwhile payoff.
I would say it's probably in my like top three favorite post-credit Marvel scenes.
And it advances nothing. I will say this. Yeah. It advances nothing. It doesn't like advance anything. It doesn't set anything else up. It doesn't give you a clue into like anything upcoming. It's just entertaining and fun.
It's just fun, yeah.
Yeah, cool. And we're being buzzed. You know what? It's the Vulture. It's the Vulture has come to attack us as we're just starting our review. Helicopter somewhere here. So, yeah. But let's get into it. So really, it did live up to the promise of being a high school movie. It really is set in high school. I mean, he's Peter Parker's a sophomore in high school. He's sort of juggling his Spider-Man duties in the evenings and when he can be a good guy, along with being mentored by Tony Stark, which I thought really worked well. That aspect worked well. And of course, keeping Aunt May in the dark about his exploits.
And not as in the dark as he thought.
Right. And there's also introduced some new characters, a new love interest that has not been, you know, in the comics or anywhere. And then also...
Well, she is in the comics.
Oh, she is in the comics?
Yes, she is a comic book character.
Okay, cool. So, oh, yes, that's right. I don't know if we should even talk about that aspect of her, the love interest, you know?
No spoilers on love interest, but she is a character in the comics.
Right, right. What I did love is Ned.
I hated him.
You hated him? Ned was my favorite.
I thought,
first of all,
he got on my nerves.
There were two things about him. One, I think he was just adorable and fun as like a sidekick to Peter Parker's life. Yeah. Secondly, I thought that Ned they even made fun of and mocked while still using the guy in the chair, which is in every movie when you have a guy that's sort of like, you know, your home base or whatever, like the guy who's sort of walking the hero through whatever the journey is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they kind of mock that aspect where he's sort of behind the computer helping Spider-Man in the field. It, you know, it doesn't happen too much that it's annoying. And the one thing
it annoyed me.
Well, the one thing I do like about this movie is I'm not a big fan of the way Sony... I feel like certain movies kind of feel too Sony.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like Sony has like a machine, a way of doing their films that I'm actually not a fan of. There's sort of a sameness about them in terms of the CGI and music and whatnot that bother me. And this felt more like a Marvel movie than a Sony movie.
I agree.
Marvel's version of Spider-Man. So from the high school stuff to the end credit sequence, that credits are actually at the end of the movie, to the way the clever way the movie opens with like this little home movie like YouTube video that Peter makes that kind of fills you in on some of the behind the scenes details of Civil War, which I thought was awesome. It was a great way to open the movie.
I thought that was way too long.
What?
I'm sorry.
What is it? I mean, the one thing that did bug me, I don't know, maybe
I lost my patience with that. I'm tired of the cell phone footage.
I thought that was fun. I don't know why. But the one thing that did kind of get on my nerves a little bit was it's a little too techie of a Spider-Man. I mean, if I want techie, that's Iron Man.
Yeah.
That's Iron Man's world is tech and little 3D floating screens and, you know, like a little Jarvis in your head kind of, you know, assisting you with stuff. That's a Tony Stark Iron Man thing,
mm-hmm.
not a Spider-Man thing. Spider-Man is about snappy quips and one-liners, and he is a goofy teenager. I mean, in the movie, he's 15 years old, so... I don't know. My only real complaint was that aspect. I also felt... The film felt a little long to me.
Very long.
Yeah. The one thing I do like is there's this great, this big ferry boat sequence that's in kind of the middle of the movie-ish. And what I do like is they didn't ruin the ending of the film. Meaning, I feel like the trailers for Spider-Man Homecoming have kind of shown a lot.
A little too much.
But I think by the last, the ferry boat is not it's a scene in kind of the middle of the film, but it's not a climactic.
Yeah.
It's not in the third act. I felt like a lot of the details of the third act were well hidden, but I'm mostly ecstatic about it. I think it's a great reinterpretation of the character. Fits new in the Marvel universe, and I do like that it kind of moved forward. Sort of all these Marvel movies are like this big connected universe that we're all having this shared experience. And I have to say that also seeing it at a theater with a paying audience on opening night, is much better than seeing it at a critic screening, which are like the worst way to see a movie. It's kind of a miserable crowd. So, mm-hmm. But like, all right, now you're not as enthusiastic as I was grinning so much. No. I just love the high school. I mean, there's even a reference to Ferris Bueller in the movie. There's footage from Ferris Bueller in the movie. He used in a clever way that I won't give away.
I didn't catch that. You'll have to tell me about it later.
Oh, dude, it was right there I don't want to ruin the sequence, but it kind of like they show a scene from Ferris Bueller and a scene that's sort of like reflective of what's happening with Spider-Man in that scene. It was very, very clever use of that footage. But what I'm over the moon. I think it's great. I think it's the best Spider-Man movie since Spider-Man 2. And I think that what I think is cool about it, I love Spider-Man 2, but Spider-Man Homecoming, totally different tone.
Tone
of Spider-Man Homecoming, much lighter tone. It is fun. It is high school. It's jokey. I mean, the laughs in this were
great. My big issue with the movie is I grew up in the 90s. Spider-Man was an adult. He was already married to Mary Jane. I was never a big Spider-Man fan to begin with until Ultimate Spider-Man came out, I think in 2002 with Brian Michael Bendis. Mm-hmm. That is more of my Spider-Man. He's more sarcastic. There's more drama to it, but it's relatable drama. It's not, you know, my girlfriend is a supermodel, but we're living in a studio apartment type stuff. It to me that that series nailed the kind of perfect blend of comedy, drama, action, and to be honest, I think the actor that most personifies my vision of Spider-Man, my favorite iteration of Spider-Man was Andrew Garfield. And I know I'm going to get a lot of hate for this.
Yeah,
and
including
I don't
hate
care.
From me.
Yeah, I don't care. I'm tired of Peter Parker in high school. That's not the Spider-Man I grew up with. I understand that's the Spider-Man a lot of people grew up with.
Yeah, it's the Spider-Man that I grew up with. Like,
and it's personal taste.
I mean, like watching the cartoons, the original cartoons, where they actually rotoscoped a gymnast, which is how they did all those stunts.
Yeah.
It was just, and they reused a lot of that footage, but it was basically a gymnast doing moves and they just rotoscoped it. But that Spider-Man, and then also, you know, I grew up reading the original comics, of course, in reprint form. I couldn't afford a copy of Amazing Fantasy number 15. I'm sorry, I just couldn't afford a copy of that comic book. And then also I grew up with like the Secret Wars version.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, the Secret Wars, I mean, it was pretty dumb. Even when I was reading it, I thought this is a dumb excuse to just get all the superheroes in a place where they can just fight.
Yeah, I love that kind of stuff, though.
Yeah, I mean, it was, once you get past the dumb excuse, it's Secret Wars is a fun comic, and it's sort of Marvel's version of Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah. I don't have the attachment to the character that a lot of people do, and my attachment goes to Ultimate Spider-Man, which I think Ultimate Spider-Man was more similar to the Andrew Garfield movies, The Amazing Spider-Man. The thing I liked about Andrew Garfield's portrayal that Tom Holland didn't really nail is Andrew Garfield came off as socially awkward. And I know a lot of criticism on the movie came from the fact that Andrew Garfield is very handsome. And, you know, he skateboards. And how could a kid that skateboards and is handsome like get picked on and he has a stutter. Like, I remember high school. Anybody who had a stutter, anybody who had a quirk, was picked on. And I think that Andrew Garfield is my favorite Spider-Man. Tom Holland was great. But this movie felt really long. I couldn't stand the character of Ned. Michael Keaton was great. I loved Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton, there's a chilling moment.
Very chilling scene.
This is what I love, though, about these movies, though. The Marvel... You know, Marvel films and here's what I'll say. The best scenes in the movie aren't the ones with the biggest special effects or the biggest, you know, digital effects and whatnot. The best scene in the movie is Peter Parker sitting in a car talking to Michael Keaton's character, and they're just talking, and it is chilling. Michael Keaton, like, really.
Michael Keaton knocked it out of the park.
He was good.
He made me admire a character from the comics that I have no interest in.
Yeah, you know, when they
announced that the Vulture was going to be the main villain of this movie, like, my eyes rolled into the back of my head so hard. But
the Vulture's not a great, like, in the comics, even the costume design is like,
yeah.
So he's got this, what I did like is he wears this sort of bomber jacket that has the furry. So they do these references. This is what I love that Marvel always seems to get right, is that Marvel will take an aspect and they pay tribute, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like they don't completely change a character like the Rhino, which was awful as portrayed in
Ultimate Comics,
right?
The series.
But it
is comic accurate.
Yeah, I guess. But I like that they pay tribute to the original design of the characters while also upgrading it.
Yeah,
you know? Like Captain America's suit, I think, is a great example of that. So
yeah,
and let's talk about Captain America
as cameo.
Yeah, the cameo. Like he's sort of like this phys ed. Like you know, he's doing these little videos. And it's a thread through the film, and it works so well. It's a great. It was a great cameo, and totally worked. So
I loved it.
Yeah. That aspect really worked. So. What are the other things that didn't? I guess you're right on the running time. I feel like it didn't need to be this long. I mean, most of these.
I just didn't give a crap about all the high school stuff.
I love that part.
To be honest, like I mean, that's it. Again, that's just not something that I grew up with, and I grew up with Peter Parker as an adult, and then I really got into the Ultimate series where. It was a little darker. This movie wasn't dark, aside from the Michael Keaton stuff. I think that was really, really good. But everything else, just it didn't seem like any of the situations were dire. It didn't seem like the drama was heightened.
I like that, and I'll tell you for this reason.
Okay.
Because this goes to the essence of Spider-Man's character.
Yeah.
Every superhero at the time that Spider-Man was created, everything was a cataclysm. It was world ending.
Yeah.
And Spider-Man's problems are different. Spider-Man's problems are, I have a Spanish exam on Tuesday. You know what I mean? Like, I think
I
that makes him endearing. It makes him human and fun. And that's what Stan Lee, when he originally created all these characters, and the reason that people preferred Marvel Comics to DC Comics at the time of Marvel's height in the creation of all these characters in the early in late 60s, that sort of like 60s era of all these characters being created all at one time that are now iconic characters at the film, at the movies, they were human. They were humanized. Like you didn't have, I mean, so if you look at some of the ridiculous cover stories or covers of Batman and Superman comics at the time that Marvel comics were going, it's like they were just dumb. Like, you know, Batman having 15 different colors of Batman costumes. These are real covers that you can look up.
The rainbow,
The rainbow Batman. Just like,
I have to wear a different suit every day.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
actually an issue.
Among other things that were just stupid. They weren't human, and that's what made Marvel Comics so great was humanizing these, you know, heroes that would be worshipped, thinking, they have problems just like me.
Yeah.
And I think more than any other character, Peter Parker symbolize that because the readers of Spider-Man, the young readers like myself, when I was reading Spider-Man, I actually wasn't in high school. I mean, it was like, you know, elementary school, but you know, he had to go to school. He had teachers. He had homework was due, and he had to be a superhero. And I identified with that. I thought that was and that's I think where Marvel superheroes. I mean, even the Fantastic Four. I mean, they had problems that were, you know. Huge and fantastic, and fantastical. You know, they were, you know, planet eaters coming to Earth, but they still had like this family dynamic that always had where stuff had to always work out. But you know, this is why I think Marvel Comics were popular, and this is why I think Spider-Man's different. Spider-Man has different kinds of human problems than maybe other. So I think that the problems were smaller.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was like trying to stop bank robbers, or like he was. Walk an old lady across the street. He stopped a guy from stealing a bike. There's like, I mean, there was like, he was the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. He's not trying to stop people from destroying the planet Earth. That's the event. That's a job for the Avengers.
Yeah.
Or other. I feel like that's what's cool about all these characters. They have their different worlds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look at all the Marvel movies, they're each of them have completely different kind of world. Spider-Man's world is different. Daredevil's world on the TV, the Netflix TV show is completely
Daredevil.
Different. Yeah. I love that show. So, You just have to expect the problems are going to be different. Sorry, I'm on a rant on this.
No. It's fine. I think you're reviewing the movie with like a love for the character, and I'm reviewing the movie as someone who's just has a passing interest in the character.
So you're not a big Spider-Man fan.
I'm not a big Spider-Man fan. I grew up with X-Men and Daredevil, like those, and Venom, like the Venom solo series. I'm a big fan of Venom, and I'm really, really bummed that, you know, apparently Sony is keeping that separate, so we're never going to see Spider-Man versus Venom versus Carnage. I would love to see that movie.
But I think that's a more serious Spider-Man.
But
right?
That's my Spider-Man. That's what I'm getting at. Like, I enjoy the more serious version of Spider-Man. Right. This was a very lighthearted movie, and I
like the lighthearted aspect.
And I didn't.
Not every one of these movies has to be some galactic ending. We're already gearing up for that. Look, because Infinity War, the two-part Avengers. I mean, it's going to be all hands on deck for all the Marvel characters. And from what I'm told, the Spider-Man 2 or whatever the second Spider-Man movie is for this.
Is the start of Phase 4.
Is the start of Phase 4. And additionally, it picks up minutes after the end of the second Infinity War movie.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I have a theory.
Let's hear the theory.
Okay. So in the Ultimate Universe, which I was a big fan of, that's where I got my love for Spider-Man. In the Ultimate Universe, Peter Parker dies after this big cataclysmic event. They already set
which
up...
Which is Infinity War.
No. It's a separate thing. But he dies at the end. And they replace him with a character named Miles Morales.
Oh!
There was... I'm not going to give anything away, but there was a slight nod to the fact that Miles Morales exists in this movie.
So, what?
Yeah.
Where?
I'll tell you off the air. It's a spoiler.
Don't tell me off
the air. Yes.
Tell our audience they're listening.
Donald Glover's character plays Miles Morales' uncle. There you go.
Whoa. Yeah. So the character's name. So Miles Morales exists in this universe.
He exists, yeah. He mentions, you know, like, nephew lives around here.
You know who also exists in this universe? Matthew Broderick. Because he was in Ferris Bueller. And we haven't talked about the soundtrack.
Yeah.
The Ramones exist.
I love
in
the Ramones.
The
yeah.
Spider-Man universe because
I liked
they,
it.
They have a the dance, the homecoming theme is totally 80s.
Yeah.
So it's all this 80s music, which was awesome. They had English beat, there was the Ramones.
The soundtrack was good.
Soundtrack was fantastic.
We've had a lot of good soundtracks.
A lot
this
of great
year.
Soundtracks. Yeah. Yeah. So but
a lot
in particular, this was a great soundtrack and I would say one of the best scores for a Marvel movie in a really long time.
The score wasn't very memorable.
I thought it was great. I mean, like, in the midst of it, I'm going, why? This is way better than... No, I thought the score was awesome. It's better than most of the Marvel movies we've seen where the score is lackluster.
Yeah, if it sounds like I'm shitting on the movie, I thought it was good. I didn't think it was great.
Right.
You know, it...
But all the applause moments, I mean, how many times did the crowd
there was a lot of
laugh?
Moments where they obviously tried to do a joke and there was no reaction from the crowd and I just sat there kind of
stone-faced. You know where there was no reaction?
Where?
During the Justice League trailer. We watched that Justice League trailer, it was like crickets. It was just, yeah. And then the War for the Planet of the Apes trailer actually got applause.
Yeah.
That was, I think people were pumped for that, but Justice League... It was like no reaction from the audience at all. I thought that was strange. It was sort of
I have
like,
hope.
Well, I mean, look, Wonder Woman is now highest grossing film in the DC film universe. Mm-hmm. So
I hope they learn their lesson with that movie.
Well,
I'm crossing my fingers for it.
Well, you know what? Hope is also what Superman's S is in Kryptonian. So So
and
I'm glad you have hope.
Hope is the color spectrum of the Blue Lanterns, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can talk comics.
That's nerdy stuff. that's a deep cut.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I
was never a Green Lantern fan.
Green Lantern's one
Green
of my favorite
Green
characters.
Lantern. Hey, your Green Lantern's origin? Found a ring. There. Okay.
He was given a ring.
He was given... Lazy. To me, lazy.
And that made him engaged to an alien.
Oh, God.
That was a stupid joke.
I don't know. Yeah. And the thing is, I love Ryan Reynolds. So,
That wasn't a good movie. It wasn't a good movie.
Well, for a number of reasons, but let's not revisit that past. Yeah, the Green Lantern movie.
My issues with the movie are just that
Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah, Spider-Man Homecoming. Tom Holland was great, but I I didn't identify with, you know, the small drama. It didn't work for me. I hated the character of Ned. I thought he was long, but everything else was really good.
I loved Ned.
I hated Ned.
He is typical sidekick in a teen movie.
I don't like teen movies.
I like teen movies.
It felt like a Nickelodeon movie, but a really good one to me.
A Nickelodeon movie?
Yeah.
Come on. You're diminishing it. It's better than that.
I said a really good one.
Okay, a really good Nickelodeon movie. Yeah. It's better than that. But here's the other thing I want to point up is I thought the action was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I did see in the theater and paid to see Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2 and hated both of them. I thought the action was overwrought and needlessly complex and just dumb. And when you look at this, I feel as if Marvel had a hand in storyboarding. They're really, when you look at action sequences in Marvel movies, I feel that they are turning it into an art form.
Yeah.
And there's rumors now that we're going to see up to 60 characters on screen in Infinity War. 60.
Just like the comics.
Just like the comics, right. Yeah. It's just going to be one of those crazy, I don't know. I always reference Crisis on Infinite Earths, that's superhero porn where it's like a George Perez drawn splash page of, 50 superheroes all doing completely different things.
Yeah.
This makes me want to actually drag out my Crisis on Infinite Earths.
It's a fantastic arc.
It's a great series.
Mm-hmm.
So that's got to be collected somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
That's got to be collected, with even all the offshoots. Because I just collected the main series.
They do have an ultimate collector's
edition. I love the whole concept behind it, which this will never be done. Well, we say never, but,
I never thought we would get Thanos.
Yeah, well, I remember I
saw the first Avengers movie and they did that little post-credit thing and I freaked out, and then some idiot by me was just like, so Hellboy's going to be in the next one? It's like,
Well, the good thing is, though, actually, that seeing, the crowd here was great. I feel like when you come to one of the theaters where you pay a little extra, the audience is just a little. I know that you have had problems in particular.
A lot of problems.
My
girlfriend's sitting here and she can attest.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, she's nodding, by the way.
Yeah, but I think you've talked about it on the podcast before where you've gone to the movies and just had bad experiences with just people being rude.
I think it's just, I have a hyper awareness to it. Like, it's mostly people talking during the movie. Like, people playing on their cell phones. As long as it's not, up in my face, I don't really have a problem. People talking, people reciting the lines, people joking. Unless it's in one of those, Rocky Horror Picture Show settings where that's the vibe they're going for.
Yeah, you're actually supposed to participate.
You know, shut the fuck up when we're watching movies.
I'm sorry.
It ruins it for me.
Yeah, laughing and clapping.
It's fine, yeah.
Or gasping
are
the correct reactions, but anything beyond that.
Totally fine.
Speaking words is not allowed in a theater if you're sitting near Anthony Ray Bench.
Yep, yeah, it drives me insane.
Cool, so, all right, look, if we had to rank this among the previous Spider-Man movies, where does it rank? Because previously there have been, five Spider-Man movies?
Five, yeah.
Five.
This is the sixth one.
I mean, I guess you could include the Turkish Spider-Man.
There's
the Spider-Man television series
from Japan the robots.
No, there's that one, and there's also the one that was on CBS back in the 70s or 80s.
70s.
Yeah.
Stanley hated that one, by the way.
Right.
I was reading an article where he was just trashing
it. I liked it when I was a kid, but I was a little kid at the time. So, where does this rank among the five Spider-Man movies?
Okay, so I was thinking about this.
Rank the Spider-Man films 1 through 5, but where are you gonna put Spider-Man Homecoming?
I know this is controversial. I would say that this is my third favorite Spider-Man movie.
No, I think that's pretty high. What are one and two?
Part where I'm gonna get a lot of flack for, and I don't care. It's all about personal preference. The Amazing Spider-Man 1 is my favorite. Spider-Man 2, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man 2, is my second favorite. This is my third favorite. I liked Amazing Spider-Man 2 slightly better than Spider-Man 3, but they're both shitty movies, and I can't stand them.
The correct order
Oh God!
is Spider-Man 2, directed by Sam Raimi, with Doc Ock. That's number one.
Okay.
Number two is Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah.
Okay. Number three is the Spider-Man, the first Spider-Man directed by Sam Raimi.
Okay.
And number four.
I forgot the first
is Spider-Man 3. Yeah. Number five is Amazing Spider-Man. And number six at the bottom is Amazing Spider-Man 2. Just for that god-awful. Look, they just came out with, today, I watched the honest trailers for Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
It was great. And it pointed out all the stuff that's shitty about that movie. I mean, Electro, come on.
Yeah.
That was just ridiculous.
I think the Sam Raimi movies are a little bit too campy for me.
Right.
I think the second one is one of the best comic book movies of all time because I don't think it was too campy. And I liked the drama of Peter Parker trying to balance his life and kind of attempt a relationship with MJ, even though she's moving on because she knows that he's very reluctant to start that relationship. Amazing Spider-Man, again, was more like the Ultimate comic series, and that's when I fell in love with the character.
I get it. See, but I'm not attached to, like, the Ultimate series because I tried to read Ultimate Fantastic Four.
And it wasn't your thing, yeah.
Ultimate Fantastic Four?
Ultimate Fantastic Four was shit.
It's terrible.
But Ultimate Spider-Man and Ultimate X-Men, to a certain point, were really good.
I have heard that, and I have not read those, but when I tried to read Ultimate Fantastic Four, I was so turned off.
Oh, it's dog shit.
And then I heard that they were basing this new Fantastic Four, directed by Josh Trank, was supposed to be based on the Ultimates version. I didn't see it.
No.
But it was just...
That was just a shitty movie, too.
Well, for a number of reasons, and I don't think Josh Trank is really the one to blame on that. I think there was... the studio.
Fox.
I mean, it was Fox took it away from him, and I don't know, I think they... but, you know, look, if this whole relationship with Marvel and Sony can work out, I'm hoping that Marvel can find a way to work with Fox and make a good Fantastic Four film that I will get to see in my lifetime.
I would love for that to happen.
I have never seen, like, when you look at all the Fantastic Four movies, and I include the Roger Corman one in that, like, they have not captured the essence of what those comic books were about. And they're different tastes. That's what I love the Marvel movies is that the things I like about the Marvel movies are they're different kinds of movies. I mean, Thor is a different flavor than a Iron Man movie, than a Captain America movie, than... You know, I mean, they just have different, they have different tones, each of them. And I think that's why they work as, you know, summer spectacle. If you're going to go with something like that, go with something where you feel that the people behind, you know, that are making it behind the camera actually care.
Yeah.
And I feel with the Marvel films, you have people behind the scenes that care at every level. Conversely, you have other series, Transformers, which you talked about.
Yeah.
Which
I have a funny story about that. So we were waiting for you, and I went to the bathroom. And when I came out, this guy was walking into Transformers, and his girlfriend or wife or whatever was just like, "We're seeing Transformers again?" And he's like, "Yeah." And she's like, "Why are we watching it a second time?" And he's like, "Because I love this movie." And I was like, "Ugh!" It broke my heart a little bit. So one thing I did love about Spider-Man Homecoming that we haven't touched upon is it's not an origin story.
Oh, yes,
God, it's not an origin story. That's one of the biggest gripes I have about The Amazing Spider-Man is that the best parts of that movie are not the redone origin. And
right.
I think it's the relationship between Andrew Garfield or Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy, because Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone were actually dating, so it just feels like a genuine relationship. But it is an origin story, and I feel like it's the same thing with Batman. We don't need another origin story, and that's the first thing we got in Batman v Superman.
Yeah, we didn't need it.
Yeah,
we didn't need
this
it.
Doesn't even reference Uncle Ben. There's one throwaway line where Peter Parker says, you know, Aunt May has had it tough.
Right, and then that was it.
Yep.
No, I did like that.
No flashback,
No. But see, the way I always thought they should handle it is like, with the Fantastic Four, right, their origin is actually kind of a lame one.
Mm.
They go into space, they get exposed to cosmic rays, and they suddenly return with powers, and that's it. It's kind of a lame. It's almost on the level of getting a ring from an alien.
Come on, man.
I hate that. Anyway, but what I'm saying is that what I loved about Fantastic Four, at least in those early comics, they would retell the origin And they do it like in a page.
Yeah.
Or like a panel, right?
You know what?
And so I feel like this is what they can do is you could just do it in a, you do the origin in a flashback that's like a few, you know, 5 minutes,
Marvel
less than that.
Marvel did that already. They did that with The Incredible Hulk.
Right, right.
This is another controversial situation, but
why do you say controversy?
I love The Incredible Hulk. I love that movie with Edward Norton.
I liked it too.
I thought it was fantastic, but a lot of people shit on that movie.
I don't even think it's controversial that I'm saying it. I'm just okay. Because I don't think anyone's going to listen to this podcast and say, did you hear the controversy on the Film Threat podcast? There was controversy when Anthony Ray Bench mentioned that he liked Incredible Hulk. Someone is on a Reddit. There's a Reddit thread now about Anthony Ray Bench. Someone out there start a Reddit thread, and all the dumb things that Anthony says.
You just
document all of them.
Yeah, you're advocating cyberbullying.
Well,
thanks a lot,
in a
asshole.
In a fun way. I'm just saying, I'm going to cause controversy by saying this. No, you're not. No, you're not. I guarantee. Search.
I get
a month.
Flack.
Dude, who do you get flack from?
My friends, people that
really?
I just strike up conversations with at like Comic-Con or something like that. I have my reasons for liking certain movies that other people don't.
I respect your reasons.
Yeah. Okay.
But I am totally going
to
be...
But you still want people to shit on me on Reddit?
Yeah, on Reddit, start a thread, Anthony Ray Bench, that guy on the Film Threat podcast, said another thing.
Yeah. Did you read the hate comments I got for my Split review?
Oh, yeah, no. They keep piling up, actually. Those keep actually
See, people
coming
hate
in.
Me. They do.
No, they don't hate
you. Yeah, they do.
They don't hate you. I like that you have opinions.
Yeah, well...
I like that we slightly disagreed on this. Your order is incorrect on the ranking of the Spider-Man movies, but that's okay. You know?
Fair enough, I guess.
You'll live to see another podcast.
Yeah.
So, yeah, cool. Okay, so, all right. I'm that Chris Gore on everything. Twitter, Instagram, all that. And Anthony, where can we find you?
On Twitter, I'm This Game Cheats.
And you, of course, Film Threat is at Film Threat on Twitter, Film Threat on Instagram. There's even a Film Threat Tumblr. Did you know that? There's a Film Threat Tumblr.
I had no idea.
Just look for it on Tumblr, Film
Threat. I will.
And then,
I didn't even know Tumblr was still around.
Please subscribe to this podcast. There's no advertising. There's just us plugging stuff. And do us a favor, too. Go to iTunes and post a review. Post a positive review.
Yeah.
Of the show. And we'll even respond to your comments on your posted review that I'm hoping is positive, but maybe you want out of a question. And also visit filmthreat.com on a daily basis, updated every day with reviews. And the podcast is out every week, sometimes more than once a week if something special is happening. And don't forget to see us at San Diego Comic-Con, at Politicon, and at DragonCon. And probably some other cons coming up, but we're doing the podcast live at a number of upcoming events, and you've already heard the plugs, so whatever. All right, and the last thing to say is, let's get out of here.
Thank you for coming. My whole life.